Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Open Talk Radio, 313 The Flash.
Right, everybody. However and whenever it is you may be listening. Thank you for stopping into another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy radio show live here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. What is up, everybody? We've got a great show planned for you here today. On Thursday, before Game 2 of the NBA Finals, we'll get to some NBA Finals talk a little bit later on in the show. But for now, we're going to talk about some Aaron Rodgers, and we're going to talk about the Houston Astros, which is just kind of a fun story from today that's kind of been bouncing around in the viral nature of sports at this point as baseball encroaches upon their All-Star game ever so slightly. Also, James Harden is going viral running around Paris right now and maybe getting stopped by police that may or may not have led to a miscommunication that James Harden has been arrested. But, yeah, what a fun world we're living in right now, aren't we? Where we can talk about Aaron Rodgers and Houston Astros and James Harden running around Paris during the NBA Finals. What a fun time, isn't this? Only in this society can we have that happen, and only in the world where we care about James Harden and little baby running around in Paris during Fashion Week. Probably Russell Westbrook is around there somewhere. Maybe Cam Newton? Probably not Cam Newton. But Russell Westbrook's probably hanging around there somewhere. Anyway, so if you're tuning in on YouTube, make sure to check us out on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. If you're tuning in on Open Talk, thanks for stopping in here today. You can also find us over on our YouTube channel, Instagram, podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, wherever it is that you get content of those sorts. Something we kind of skipped over yesterday that kind of got left on the remnants of watching the Euro Cup. By the way, England, congratulations. England wins the wins their Euro semifinal, and they'll play, I believe, Sunday for the European Championship versus Italy, so that should be kind of cool. Congrats to England. A little bit of a watered-down championship, but so be it. England ended up winning that game, and lost in that was our conversation around the match. And this is something I was talking about a little bit earlier today on the podcast, which was surrounding Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks, and I wanted to incorporate in some Aaron Rodgers talk, because we kind of let the match slide, and for those who don't know what the match is this celebrity golfing tournament that has kind of caught steam over the past few years. And you get some famous people and some famous golfers and put them together, and you get a made-for-TV event that we can put on TNT and sell a ridiculous amount of ads, just an unbelievably ridiculous amount of advertisements on that broadcast. So they put that together usually every like 6 or 7 months. And this time around, you had Aaron Rodgers partaking in it, fully knowing that Aaron Rodgers was holding out of camp and fully knowing that Aaron Rodgers was unhappy with the Green Bay Packers. Like, this has been common knowledge for like 2.5 months now, going back to the NFL draft. So this was with like full public knowledge that there was a lot of animosity from Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. And so one of the things that I found most interesting with that Aaron Rodgers story was he kind of deflected the questions. They gave it a chance to break news. They wanted to try and get the gotcha journalism. Aaron Rodgers had to take it. By virtue of signing up for this, he had to take some of the shots, and he is very cool and calculated and very Aaron Rodgers smooth-like navigating a lot of these questions. And they tried that Brian Anderson and Larry Fitzgerald and Charles Barkley, which the irony of Larry Fitzgerald trying to figure out retirement situations was pretty funny. But they were all navigating those retirement situations and trying to figure out, you know, what exactly is Aaron Rodgers going to do? Can we make headlines here on the match? And they did make headlines, but just by asking the question, they were going to make headlines because we have full transparent access to Aaron Rodgers in a relaxed environment. So if you can get Aaron Rodgers to say something or make a mistake here or there, of course, it's going to be a big story that they get to take part in, but, you know, maybe it wasn't going to be quite that. So the match was interesting. I watched like maybe an hour or so of it, but five and a half hours of celebrity golfing I've learned is a lot. But I like the concept of the event. They do it every like 6 months. I think that's like a fair amount of time to have an event like that in terms of like breaking up the time. So I like the concept that they do. I think they space it out just enough, especially when it's going up against game one of the NBA Finals. That was just an unfortunate break for Turner as a partner with the NBA. That made it hurt even a little bit more for Turner. But yeah, so that ended up being an interesting little phenomenon between Aaron Rodgers and the match going on. And this brought me back to the Russell Wilson thing that kind of disappeared from our minds as we kind of just moved on to other things through March and towards the NFL draft. Is like Russell Wilson kind of folded. Like there was a huge conversation around like, would Aaron retire before the deadline passed? And like, of course Aaron wasn't going to retire. He'd rather play for the Packers than sit out a season at 38 years old coming off an MVP. Like Aaron's not that brutally unhappy. He just doesn't have options other than make things ugly and force a trade, which to this point, Aaron hasn't been willing to make things ugly yet, which is which symbolizes that I think they're kind of at a standoff and Aaron's not going to be able to win without making it ugly, or he's going to be able to get his way and get out of Green Bay if that's what he really wants. But what's fascinating when Aaron has no options was that he has chosen so far to make it moderately ugly, to preserve fit, to save face through the conversation, and maybe, just maybe, once it gets to a point, have the narrative change so dramatically that people will understand when Aaron Rodgers makes it ugly. And maybe sitting out a game or two is the point that it'll be. But I said this on, I can't remember where, I think it was on with our friend NFL broadcaster. I'm about, let's say, 80% sure Aaron Rodgers won't sit out a game this year. 80% sure that Aaron Rodgers won't end up sitting out a game this season. And Aaron Rodgers has shown resistance to making things ugly, because that's the only way he's going to get out of a contract that is technically a 3-year deal, but the bare minimum is a 1-year deal that the team can get out of after this season, if they really didn't want Aaron Rodgers, which would be kind of strange. But he hasn't been ready to make it ugly. Russell Wilson, on the other hand, Russell Wilson just folded. Like Russell Wilson, as soon as there was a press on it, he folded. And he went back to corporate Russell Wilson, and he went back to guy who preserves his brand and his image. We talked about this before. Star players of NFL teams, especially public faces of NFL teams, become the faces of billion-dollar corporations. I mean, we saw a report today that Steve Ballmer is now officially worth $100 billion. Like, that's the top scale of what we're talking about, but ultimately, public-facing organizations trafficking in the emotions business, an emotional corporation, a corporation trafficking in people's emotions worth $1 billion, the public face of that corporation has immense opportunities if they side with management of this corporation. There are ridiculous opportunities at your disposal. J.J. Watt is the perfect example of this. It's the reason why, you know, in the past it would be the NFL. Well, the NFL has a history of whitewashing their star image to present a more white-facing league than the NFL actually has, because the NFL is 70 to 75% black, and it's been 70 to 75% black since the 1990s. The NFL has tried to portray itself along its white superstars as the people they advertise forward, whether it's Peyton Manning or Tom Brady or Drew Brees. Aaron Rodgers didn't go along with it to the same extent, but Aaron Rodgers had his moments with his, you know, obviously he's an endorser for State Farm and has national television commercials. So Aaron Rodgers is a different generation from Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees. And one of the things that the NFL has done more expressly than putting their white stars forward is putting their black stars in the background as secondary figures in the giant soap opera that 20 million people enjoy. And the NFL has all but admitted to this. Like, the NFL has admitted that for years that was the game plan, is we're going to put the Mannings forward and we're going to put this face of white football stardom, Tim Tebow. We're going to Tim Tebow a lot of people and make Tim Tebow the public face of the league because he reflects conservative traditional values and players that don't say anything interesting and reflect if you reflect the idea of family and you reflect the idea of a life in balance, you can be the spokesperson for jeans and sell a lot of jeans and make a ton of money. And this has been the mantra for a while. And Russell Wilson is an interesting guy in this camp, but I want to focus on J.J. Watt first, because I was going to mention J.J. Watt, like, he became the face of Subway, and J.J. Watt became guy who posts about, like on his Twitter, posts about Pat Tillman when he arrives in Arizona. And J.J. Watt is the guy who raises, you know, $30 million for hurricane relief. And he becomes the Walter Payton Man of the Year, which is just NFL propaganda. Like, the entire award was created as NFL propaganda. Not that the good work that's being done. The entire concept of the Walter Payton Man of the Year award is NFL propaganda. It is propaganda to put forth a star player of the league. The reason why Eli Manning and Larry Fitzgerald and J.J. Watt and Russell Wilson are the ones who win the awards now. Chris Long, one of the first families of football, wins the award. Like, this is what the NFL has put forward now. It is the entire concept of the award is NFL propaganda. The entire concept of the Walter Payton Man of the Year. And Russell Wilson got that award last year as the front public corporate face of the NFL, which has been extremely beneficial to Russell Wilson, because Russell Wilson now gets to be the guy who is what they would traditionally give to the white superstars, even though Russell Wilson is biracial. And Russell Wilson's background is complex, because Russell Wilson comes from a baseball background. He is the child of a white mother and a black father who graduated from Dartmouth, I want to believe, and was a professor in the Virginia area. Russell Wilson went to private schools with high tuitions in high school, went to schools that were almost entirely white. And Russell Wilson ends up getting to NC State on a baseball scholarship and walks onto the football team and just dominates everybody, like is just dominating everybody at NC State, a place that, by the way, has produced a lot of white NFL quarterbacks in its history, most famously Philip Rivers, but then you can go down to Ryan Finley and Mike Glennon and guys that they've always had a white quarterback at NC State, at least almost entirely. There are a few examples otherwise, but the front-facing guys at NC State, there's a racial history behind it, and obviously being in the triad of Duke, Carolina, and NC State, there's always a racial history behind all this stuff. But anyways, so Russell Wilson ends up leaving NC State because he had basically said as much as, I'm going to the NFL, and then just tried to come back for his senior year after his draft stock plummeted for the reason of he was short. And he's not even that short. He's like 5'10", 5'11". But this is Russell Wilson was the person who ends up breaking the trend, even after seeing the success of Drew Brees. Russell Wilson ends up being the one who breaks that trend of short quarterbacks can't be drafted, where Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray end up being number one overall picks because of the success of Russell Wilson and Drew Brees. Drew Brees, obviously, much earlier, but Russell Wilson is kind of the along the lines of like, hey, he only fell because he's not tall, and that's going to be a catastrophic – that's going to be something that other teams can't afford to make, that inefficiency that allows the Seahawks to get a Super Bowl champion Hall of Fame quarterback at $800,000 a year. And so Russell Wilson to Seattle, and the Seahawks have a Legion of Boom defense that is like a no-Fs-given kind of defense. And what becomes so fascinating for the Seahawks is after all the winning is done, and we talked about this today on Take It Easy, after all the winning is done, they got rid of every single member of the no-Fs-given Legion of Boom who, you know, they Richard Sherman talks about this, and he will say it much more once they get a 30 for 30 out. Like, Richard Sherman has very much said, you know, we didn't really bleep with Russell Wilson. Like, we didn't love him or hate him. We just didn't really like his MO when he was quarterback in Seattle. And then he became the $300 million quarterback. Not literally. It's a baseball analogy. I think he got $30 million a year for 4 years, but it was basically would end up being 10 years of guaranteed money from the Seahawks. So Russell Wilson gets the $30 million a year resetting contract, and now it's him. He is the front-facing guy. It's no longer this Legion of Boom defense. It's no longer Marshawn Lynch, who is a bigger celebrity in the Seattle area than Russell Wilson was until like 2018. Even like years after Marshawn retired, he was still a massive celebrity in Seattle. And only then does Russell Wilson become the front-facing guy. And the Seahawks went right to the playbook that all the NFL teams do, which is face of a corporation. We went from having this defense, these young guys, this coach, this crazy running back, to corporate face, corporatization of the Seahawks. We are going to put forth this guy who is very selective about what he releases. He says nothing interesting, and he says nothing interesting. He only shows you the portions of his life he wants to, and his entire public-facing image is a propaganda machine for the Russell Wilson brand. Not that there's like anything inherently wrong with it. It's a huge opportunity. It's just boring. Like, it's just so that Russell Wilson can make more money, which is Russell Wilson's prerogative. I'm not sure I wouldn't make the same decision under the same circumstances, but it's just boring that Russell Wilson is not interesting at all. And that the only thing Russell Wilson puts forth is, you know, family man, dating celebrity Ciara, and this is part of Russell Wilson's brand and his children, and traditional conservative values are being put forth. Now, whether that's the truth or not is another thing. Like, Tiger Woods put forth the exact same things. Married a white woman, all about family, traditional conservative values in a sport where they were very much ready to ostracize him as being the dark-skinned golfer, which is not the correct term. Like, it's too simplistic and doesn't take nuance into account. But if we strip away all of the fluff, that's ultimately what it was, that Tiger Woods got vilified and the front-facing image he was putting forward was clearly a lie. And they made him the most hated man in America for 2 years. Tiger Woods was like the most hated man in America because it was very clearly the front-facing image was propaganda. And of course it's propaganda. Even for Russell Wilson, it's propaganda, not to the extent Tiger Woods was propaganda, but of course it's propaganda because it serves the benefit of Russell Wilson that his Instagram and Twitter accounts are very specific about what he releases. Very, very specific. The Kardashian model is the same idea. Very, very specific about what gets released and what parts of the life you see. And it's just disappointing because of how interesting the Seahawks were as a champion dynasty. But Russell Wilson, it seemed like, was ready to buck up against being corporate front-facing Russell Wilson, and he folded. He folded the first second that he had, and he was pressed on it and ready to make a push. And maybe he never wanted to leave Seattle, and it was blown way out of the water. But Russell Wilson doesn't slip up in the same week talking about how, you know, we need some help on the offensive line. And then Russell Wilson's agent puts forth, hey, here's the four teams Russell Wilson actually wants to go to Adam Schefter. Which, by the way, Adam Schefter is a propaganda machine for the NFL, too. So when there's rumors like Russell Wilson wants to go to the Jets and the Dolphins, and they're like, no, here's the four teams Russell Wilson wants to go to, if not for the Seattle Seahawks. And the like, that does not happen. That does not happen with Russell Wilson's agent putting his name on it. Russell Wilson's agent put his name on, here's the four teams Russell Wilson wants to go to, which in essence means Russell Wilson is putting his name on, here's the four teams Russell Wilson wants to go to. Put his name on it to Adam Schefter, not like the weird reports that he wanted to go to the Dolphins and Jets because at the time they had the number three and the number two pick in the NFL draft. No, this was Russell Wilson's agent, which means Russell Wilson's instructing him through his agent. Russell Wilson through his agent saying, here's the four teams I want to go to, and I'm upset with the team for not getting me an offensive line. Twice in the same week, back in February, late February, right around the Carson Wentz trade. Like, that does not happen. And Russell Wilson, right after that, folded. And again, it's not a bad thing. It's just a boring thing. Like, Russell Wilson is going to be the corporatized face of the Seahawks that we kind of came to expect from Russell Wilson. Like, it's I love this analogy, and it kind of applies to this, where it's the idea that sports fans want to have an emotional relationship with their teams. And in the post, you know, 1990s boom of money in sports, like sports becoming corporations type of money, I mean, a lot of the times they're like, no, this is prostitution. We are offering you a service and you are giving us money, sometimes too much money, for this service that we are providing. And sports traffic in the emotions business, and sports have teetered this line very well, sometimes to exploit people's emotions for financial profit. But this is a quote John Amici has. He's a clinical psychologist and former NBA player. It's like, at a certain point, you cannot attain a certain amount of wealth without exploiting people. Exploiting people financially, exploiting people circumstantially, exploiting people through education, or exploiting people's emotions. Like, at a certain point, or any other form of exploitation. Those are just the four that came to my mind. But at some level, you have to exploit people to make extra gains, like Amazon. Amazon has to exploit their workers in order to make those levels of gains, because people don't want to wait 2 days for their package to show up.